Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Mahan. Dr. Ava is a gifted attorney, researcher, lecturer, and author of 5 books. She received her Juris Doctorate from Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and is a member of the New York Bar Association. Dr. Ava has been featured in Essence magazine many times and was named by Essence as being one of America's most powerful black women. Join Dr. Ava every Thursday evening on Elevated Places, where you will hear a message that will provide you with the tools needed to repair and uplift the spirit, moral character, and living condition of the black man and woman. Our call-in number is 347-324-5091, or visit us on our radio show page at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. And now, here is your host, Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be unto you, and welcome to Elevated Places. I am your host, Ava Muhammad, and as our wonderful announcer told you, we are live on blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. We are pleased and honored to be streaming live on WKBOL, 100.1 FM in Waterloo, Iowa. KBOL also carries the Time and What Must Be Done series by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and invites you to hear Torchlight with Michael Muhammad Fridays, 11:30 a.m. Central, 12:30 Eastern. It is such a blessing to have the opportunity to host Elevated Places now on broadcast radio every Sunday, 4 p.m. Central, 5 Eastern, on the Talk of Chicago, the legendary WVON Radio, 1690 AM. And we stream live on WVON.com, or you can download the iHeart app for free on your smartphone or tablet. Follow me on Instagram and on Twitter at Dr. Ava Muhammad. I love the discussions with you on Twitter. I love reading your comments. And please don't forget avaspeaks.com for my books and lectures. Now, of course, Elevated Places is in its fourth year on Blog Talk Radio. This is a forum. It is a forum for you, where you and I and our esteemed panel engage in open and intelligent discussion, along with our brilliant array of guests. We center this conversation around freedom, justice, and equality, including economic independence and self-determination for the 40-plus million descendants of slaves here in North America. And we have asked you to complete our survey so that we can make this show the best it can be, and your comments have been priceless. You can get that link on Twitter at Dr. Ava Muhammad, and I will give it to you again later this evening. We are going to have a show around your comments and that survey shortly after Savior's Day. And before I turn the announcement segment over to our beloved co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad, I want to remind you that we invite anyone and everyone who logs in or listens in to participate in this conversation. Call us, 347-324-5091. That's 347-324-5091. And so again, it is a great blessing to be with you once again. I am happy to be joined by my co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad, as well as Elevated Places analyst and contributor Dr. Ridgely Muhammad. And we're going to be joined shortly by a very special guest as we prepare to go into the great city of Detroit, Michigan, Savior's Day 2014. This will be unlike any experience that you and I ever had. So, Dr. Ridgely, assalamu alaikum to you. And all right. And Brother Terrence Muhammad, assalamu alaikum to you as well. And why don't you get us started this evening? This is going to be a great, great program tonight. And very shortly, Dr. Ridge is going to bring on our guests. But why don't you bring us up to date so we can be on time and in time with the time and what must be done?
Well, you know, Dr. Avery, I know there's a lot that has been going on. There's a lot that has transpired. But I think tonight in my update and report, I will just be talking about, as we're approaching the crowning event of Black History Month, Savior's Day, that we're walking into what we know as Black History Month in February. Well, what happened last week as we was on our show, we knew that the passing of Amira Baraka transitioned. And we also lost another, Franklin McCain, one of the NT4 that set in 1960 at the Woolworth Counter here in Greensboro, North Carolina, that started this sit-in movement, which later launched SNCC and CORE and those kinds of organizations. And the interesting thing about it, the first show of Elevated Places for the year involved the youth, and they were four freshmen. And today there was a memorial at the university for him, and one of the things that the Student Government Association president said is that these were young men without titles. These were young men, you know, that was new. So they didn't have all the quote-unquote education or the training of what to do. And someone also said at the memorial, if you have to wait on the masses to move, they would never move. And I say that is because we have to make that movement and we have to make that change and show the example for the people, because the masses are not going to always just run and come to our movement, but we have to take those stands. And those four freshmen took the stand that eventually changed our nation. Also, on yesterday, we do recognize Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, as next week most people will be celebrating it. But at the same time, we perish from the lack of knowledge, and we see a generation that shows lack of respect, even though this is our best generation that's fearless. But at the same time, we see that the enemy has corrupted the minds of our young people to the point that I know, I'm not sure if it was today or yesterday on WVON, they discussed these MLK flyers for parties, twerking for freedom. Yeah, twerking for freedom and crazy things of that nature, and the disrespect of our brother, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., as they have him throwing up West Side, having a gold chain. And this is the kind of world and society that we're going into today. So I'm just looking at those things. And lastly, I would just say that we have to uplift the history of the Million Man March. We have to uplift the name of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Minister Farrakhan, because most people are writing their own history and writing people out of history. As we look at Martin Luther King Jr., we only see him as having a dream, as though he didn't live years after that or had more speeches before that. That was more profound and actually spoke to the concerns and the needs of the people, because it was more than just having a dream. It was about jobs and justice. And as we know, 50 years later, we're still crying out for jobs and justice, which lays the basis for the economic blueprint today, where we must keep pushing on. And also, we want to make sure everybody continues to tune in to the time of what must be done as the minister continues on the wheel every Saturday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central at NOI.org. And just let's get ready for Savior's Day. And like I said, I know there's other issues that are going on around the world. If y'all have, you can throw them in. But I just want us to pay attention as we go into these Martin Luther King parades and celebrations, that we really reflect and understand the significance of him. And there are a lot of clips and speeches that people don't even know, didn't hear, and they don't even know about the monumental meeting of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and the mindset that he had shifted into, or the conversation that he had with Harry Belafonte about God integrating into a burning house. But we don't know that because we allow our oppressor to tell us the history about our own leaders.
And what an excellent and timely observation. I'm grateful for that. And that is so true. And it's so significant that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and it seems to me alone among our people, is lifting up Dr. King in a way that I've never heard those who claim to be part of the Dr. King workshop and be his followers share the in-depth knowledge of the genius and commitment that this young man brought to our struggle. Because he was killed, he was assassinated at 39. He got involved in the struggle at the age of 26, which always, again, reminds us that how critical the youth are.
Right.
Malcolm X, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Minister Farrakhan, they were all very young.
That's right.
When they started their journey into the most difficult work on the planet Earth, which is the upliftment and now the actual resurrection, the spiritual and mental and moral resurrection of the black man and woman in America. And so I thank you for that reminder, because we are really allowing this white-dominated culture to just take us down into its gravitational pull. And so tonight, yes, sir, Brother Ridgely?
Yeah, I'd like to thank Brother Terrence for a couple of months ago for shooting me that link to that 1 minute and 15 second, or 1 minute 18 second video of Dr. Martin Luther King, which I really believe will change the future of our people in the world. Because in that little brief moment, it showed that Dr. King had moved from a position of trying to integrate into the society to a position of wanting land and resources by which people can live equitably and have an independent economic existence. And that's the person who they killed. That's the person who they don't want people to know about. And that's the person that the others who are around Dr. King don't bring up, because they don't want to have the same fate as Dr. King, because Dr. King was crucified, murdered, as an example for the rest to stay in line. So they have stayed in line and not taken up the same type of argument and developed the same type of leadership and direction that Martin Luther King was moving in, because they know it's safe not to go that route. They know that once you go that route, your life is in danger. So we thank the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan for pushing Dr. Martin Luther King back out front as to where he needs to be, and to see where we would be as a people if Dr. Martin Luther King was successful with his Poor People's Campaign, and when he had $10 billion from the government at that time for economic development. So this movement continues, and we thank the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan for taking up the mantle of Dr. Martin Luther King and taking it to the next level.
Excellent, excellent point. This is such a great launching pad for tonight's program. And Dr. Ridgely, I'm going to have you shortly bring in our special guests. I just can't think of anything more timely, especially in the wake of what you just described about the intent of the enemy of our rise to make sure we are left leaderless.
Right.
And there's more than an abundant amount of evidence that should satisfy any reasonable person that it is time to go for self. It does not matter what your religious affiliation is, what your ideological point of view is. As black people who share a common history and a common ancestry, and above all, a common experience, then and now, in the more than a half a millennium since we were brought to these shores in chains, that by now we should see the light and realize that we have got to do something for ourselves. And as Minister of Agriculture, Dr. Ridgely, you're the point man for the Nation of Islam in our move toward what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and now the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan are calling us to, which is an economic blueprint for freedom from want and poverty. And there's no such thing as being free from want and poverty if you don't own land. And once you own that land, the first thing you better do on it is live on it and grow your own food. Because if you don't have your own land and if you don't control your own food production, then you are never free from poverty and want, even if you have a couple of dollars. You are always at the whim of the people who put that dollar or dollars in your pocket to withdraw those dollars at any time or let you keep the dollars and change their value while the dollars are
in your
pocket.
That's right.
So land has intrinsic value. It doesn't matter what the economy is. If you have some dirt, a patch of earth to call your own, you will always have some place to live, and you can plant something there, and you can eat. And so I just want to briefly read our researcher, Brother Bobby Muhammad, lifted some scripture that I just need to read from the book of Genesis. When all Egypt began to feel the famine, the people cried to Pharaoh for food. Then Pharaoh told all the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph and do what he tells you." When the famine had spread over the whole country, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold grain to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe throughout Egypt. So we need to understand what Egypt was symbolic of in the Bible. Who is Pharaoh and who is Joseph? Because it was not Pharaoh that fed his own people. Pharaoh told his people to go to this man, Joseph. And so we need to revisit and get a good understanding of the prophecy of the Old Testament. And then in Deuteronomy, when you enter the land the Lord your God is giving to you, be careful not to imitate the abominations of the people living thereabout. Rather, you must be perfect before the Lord your God. Now, we can take it or let it alone, and I don't say this judgmentally. It's just an observable reality. But the culture of America is an abomination. Detestable customs, that's what abominations means. And just like Brother Terrence just talked about twerking to honor Dr. King, okay, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. And so with that, Dr. Ridgely, if you could do us the honor of bringing our guest into this conversation, we need to talk about food production, because if we're going to get away from abominable behavior, we can't separate from the behavior and the culture and still go back there to get food.
That's right. And we have, you know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said agriculture is the root of civilization, but at the crown of civilization you have your cities. And all of our people now are in cities. So, brother, instead of on the land, as a matter of fact, farmers, because we were forced to grow stuff for the market, we have to buy products from the store as well, because everybody's been taken off the land. And so Brother Malik Yakini is an activist in the city of Detroit. He's a master gardener as well as an organizer. He's getting the empty plots of land to be cultivated and people to work it, because the key is working, somebody to work it. And he's also organizing the people to receive the product, and also to receive products from other black farmers and small farmers from across the country, because they're developing a cooperatively owned grocery store in the Detroit area. So I thought that it would be apropos to hear from him to see what they're doing in the city, how is it working, and how do you get city people to get their hands dirty again, and to not only get their hands dirty, but to organize and work together again as we used to when we did have real communities. So I'd like to welcome my brother, Malik Yakini. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Brother Malik.
Let's see. Oh, I think his line. That's.
Can you hear me?
There you go.
Hear you now.
Okay. Here we go. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Ridgely.
Assalamu alaikum, sir.
And Salaam Alaikum, Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad. It's such a pleasure to be on your show, and I've been enjoying this conversation so far. In fact, there's not one word that has been spoken that I don't agree with 100%.
Well, thank you, beloved, for coming on and taking time from what I know has to be a super busy schedule in order to enlighten us even further. And I just don't believe we can ever overemphasize the need to regain control over food production, starting with ourselves right where we are. And I know you bring plenty to the table on that topic.
Well, sister, let me start by telling the audience what I told Dr. Ridgely, and that is that for me, this understanding of the need for black people to grow our own food and to do for self grows directly from the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the example of the Nation of Islam. So I just want to root this work that we're doing squarely upon the shoulders of the nation, and that we're very proud to be continuing this legacy. But as you said earlier, it's absolutely critical that any people who want to be free, proud, and self-determining have land and grow their own food. You cannot depend upon your enemy to feed you and expect to be free. In fact, one of my teachers, Brother Anand Laloli in Toronto, says that men and women feed themselves, children and pets are fed. And so we want to be able to stand shoulder to shoulder with the other men and women on the face of the earth by feeding ourselves.
Well, that leads us right into you're starting to answer the first question, and I'd like you to expound on something that Dr. Ridgely brings up a lot, pardon me, and that is, you know, we are truly disconnected from even the concept of growing our own food, so much so that we really, you hardly see us even in the produce section of a supermarket. Black women in particular are found nowadays at fast food outlets.
That's right.
And what began as, I remember when I was a young child growing up in the 50s and 60s, way, way back in the day, first of all, they didn't have anything. I think McDonald's was new in terms of widespread appearance. It just all of a sudden popped up on the landscape everywhere. But it was a place that you went rarely, okay?
That's
and
right.
You just did not eat outside of your own. Your mother prepared your meals and prepared them pretty much from scratch. And even living in Columbus, Ohio, where I grew up, we weren't on the farm anymore, but we had in our yard, we had a plum tree, we had a cherry tree, and we had a peach tree. And my mom and dad had a little plot of land, a little plot of a garden, you know, about maybe 10 feet by 10 feet behind the garage. And so we didn't have a meal where we didn't have a few slices of fresh tomatoes or onions or something came up out of the ground straight to us. And as time passed and we got away from home-cooked meals, and of course the structure of the country by design changed so that nobody is home preparing meals. Everybody's
That's right.
out trying to survive. The children, the woman's at work, the child is at a daycare center. And
That's right.
No more sit-down dinners. And now we're at a point where everybody is eating out of bags and boxes while they're in a car or walking down the street. And so I would ask that you help us carve out a way to come back from that, because we are steeped in that.
Yes, well, you're absolutely correct. And, you know, American culture, as you were talking about at the beginning of the program, has had a tremendously negative effect on us, because this disconnection that you speak of is really part of American culture and part of Western culture generally. And so, but we see something happening globally, and that is that around the world, people have been convinced that urban life is somehow better than rural life, and that somehow you are more sophisticated if you live in the city. In fact, when I was growing up, the last thing you wanted somebody to call you was country. Everybody wanted to be, you know, sophisticated and worldly. And so throughout the world, we have this phenomenon where people are leaving the countryside, going into the city, both for this kind of lure of sophistication, but also many times because that's where jobs are. And so we're leaving the countryside, leaving the rural areas, where we have the chance to grow food and build a self-reliant future, and going into cities where we're totally dependent upon the captains of industry and the capitalists in order for us to survive. So we definitely have to reverse this trend. But also let me add this. So that's a global trend that we see happening with people throughout the world. But then with the black people in the Western Hemisphere, we have a particular problem. And that problem is that because of our history of having been enslaved at the hands of whites in this country, that we, many of us, perceive agricultural work as somehow being tied to slavery or sharecropping or the other forms of tenant farming.
Yeah.
And so many of our people don't want to identify with agriculture because it's tied to that painful history. And so part of what we have to do is we have to reframe agricultural work not as work that is enriching whites or enriching someone else, but as work that can make our own community self-reliant and self-sufficient. And so that's really the mission that we're on here in the city of Detroit with the Detroit Black Community Food Security Network.
And tell us a little bit about how many gardens you have going there in Detroit.
Well, there's about 1,400 gardens total in the city of Detroit that are registered
wow.
in something that's called the Garden Resource Program. Now, this is outside of what our organization is doing because there's a vast amount of vacant land in the city of Detroit. In fact, about one-third of the footprint of the city of Detroit is vacant land at this point because of the intentional disinvestment in the city of Detroit over the last 50 years or so and the intentional investment in the mostly white ring of suburbs surrounding the city of Detroit. So we have this tremendous amount of vacant land, which has helped to spur the most vibrant urban agricultural movement in the United States. But our organization in particular, the Detroit Community Food Security Network, operates D-Town Farm, which is a 7-acre organic farm in the city of Detroit. It's on land that unfortunately we do not own. We're attempting to purchase the land now, but it's land that is owned by the city itself in a city-owned park. And so what we're doing is we are creating a model urban farm and showing our people the various techniques that can be used to grow food in the city. We're training new farmers. In fact, every summer we have an urban agriculture internship program where we train 10 young farmers each year. We're able to pay them while they're learning. They're helping us with production, and at the same time, they're getting their hands in the soil and learning all of the techniques related to growing fruits, vegetables, and herbs. We also do a tremendous number of tours because we are so disconnected from agriculture. One of the ways that we help to reconnect people is by giving tours to school groups and faith-based organizations and university students. And so we'll show them, you know, we'll walk them through the farm and show them the various crops that are growing, show them the hoop houses that we're using for season extension, and show them our composting operation so that people can begin to get some concept of really what it takes to grow food in an urban area. So we're doing all this in order to raise the profile of this discussion on the need for our people to not only grow the food that we consume, but we need to control the whole cycle. We need to grow the food. We need to process it to the extent that we process food. And we talk about processing food. We're not talking about processing in the same way that the dominant food system in America processes with all kinds of preservatives and artificial coloring. But, for example, if you take a pound of collard greens and you were to go to a farmer's market and just sell that pound of collard greens straight out of the field, you get one price for it. But if you can take that same pound of collard greens and cut it up and put it into a bag, that's a form of processing. And the price almost doubles instantly just by doing that. And so we need to look at things like that, too. Not only how do we grow the food, but how do we add value to the food? And then how do we control the wholesaling of it and the retail sale of it so that the money that we spend on food is circulating within our own communities and creating empowerment as opposed to the current model, which is an extractive model, where many times Arabs, and in the case of Detroit, it's an ethnic minority from Iraq called Chaldeans, who own about 90% of the food stores in Detroit, and they function on in an extractive manner, where they don't live in our communities. They come in, they make tremendous profits on what we spend on food and other goods, and those profits are snatched directly out of our communities and go into the ring of suburbs where most of these merchants live. And so we're saying it's time out for this exploitation of black people, for this extracting of our wealth, and we have to find a way to capture that wealth and circulate it within our own communities so that we empower our people. But, of course, this is not new news to anybody in the Nation of Islam, because this is what the nation has been teaching and practicing for many decades.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about the quality-owned grocery stores that you all are working on, but you said something just now that kind of struck me. You said that in Detroit it's the Chaldeans. Now, we know in other parts of the country you have different ethnic groups who are controlling the food in those areas, and it's interesting that they do it as a group. Not just, you know, a Korean store over here, then a Chaldean store over here, and then a Jewish store over here, but they come in as groups and control a whole community. That's a very
Absolutely.
That's very interesting. Is that, do you find that to be true, and how can we as a group begin to control our community? How can we work together as entrepreneurs to try to control
our
area?
That's absolutely true. They do not function as individuals. They have mechanisms that are set up in order to loan money to each other, and to help each other get stores started, and they see themselves as a people. They have a sense of peoplehood. And, of course, that's our greatest deficit, that we don't have a strong sense of peoplehood and a strong sense that our destiny is a collective destiny that's tied together. And so, of course, we have to rebuild that. Now, the thing that black people in the United States and in the Western Hemisphere faced, of course, that other people, Chaldeans and Koreans and others who come into our community to run stores, haven't faced, is the experience of enslavement in many ways separated us from our traditional cultures, and it's your culture that gives you the guidepost that lets you know how you behave in relationship to each other. And so this sense of peoplehood has been diminished in us because of the experience of enslavement, all those things that follow enslavement living in racist America. And so we have to rebuild this sense of peoplehood in order to get our people to even cooperate with each other. And that's not an issue that Chaldeans or Koreans or other groups have. Their culture is still intact. They come here speaking their language. They come here with their traditional names. They come here knowing what their traditional foods are, and they come here knowing that their destiny is tied together and that they have the responsibility to work collectively for the advancement of their people. We have to do the exact same thing if we're to stand among the other men and women on the earth. So the cooperative grocery store, let me speak to that, Dr. Ridgely, since you asked about that. So, again, we're very concerned about this extractive model that we see in the city of Detroit. And so within the confines of a capitalist system, which we don't think is a good system to begin with, but it's what we're faced with right now, but within the confines of a capitalist system, the cooperative model is the best model for us to use in order to have collective ownership and to circulate wealth within our community. And so we're starting a cooperatively owned community grocery store, which will be a full-service grocery store in what's called the North End of Detroit. And it's an area that's pretty centrally located so that our people from all parts of the city can get to it. And it will sell both high-quality food, organic foods, for example, but also we realize that our people, you know, need transitions. And so we can't just come in with all the, you know, the best organic foods that are high priced that people may not have access to. So our plan is to have some of the foods that people are used to and that they can get at a reasonable price, but at the same time raise their consciousness about food so that they see the importance of eating healthier foods to contribute to being healthier individuals and families and communities. So the store, again, will be a full-service grocery store that will have a dairy department, a produce department, a meat department. It will have a cafe. We'll have an incubator kitchen attached to it so that food entrepreneurs who might be preparing something in their kitchen now who want to really ramp up production so that they can take it into the retail marketplace will be able to operate in a licensed, certified kitchen where they can do that legally without worrying about the health department shutting them down and what have you. That will be an important part. And then also we'll have a community meeting space for lectures and films and other things that help to raise our consciousness, not only about food, but about the other things that we need to do in order to really uplift our community. So we're doing a series of community engagement sessions now to really teach people about the history of co-ops and how black people in this country have traditionally used co-ops, both for farming. You know, many of the farmers coming out of the Reconstruction era function in cooperatives, both to buy land, to buy seeds, to do the work collectively, to take the harvest to wholesalers collectively. And so we have this long history of using co-ops. And so part of what we do is we frame this within the context of our own history and culture and show that this is a tool that black people have traditionally used in this country in order to leverage our collective buying power and to leverage our collective labor so that we're not operating as individuals. And so during these community engagement sessions, we share this history with people, and then we share our specific plans for developing this cooperatively owned grocery store. And I can tell you we've been met only with very positive feedback and with people just really wanting to know, well, when is the store going to open? How can I participate? And so there's a number of people who are really ready for this to happen, and we just feel so blessed to be able to participate in this resurrection, as Dr. Muhammad said, of black people here in the United States.
Well, Brother Malik, you know, we want to just thank you for what you have shared thus far. And one of the things I want to tell all of the callers that are listening, we do want you to call in, and we want to try to get as many as we can. And the number for tonight is 347-324-5091. 347-324-5091. We're getting ready to come to some callers, but I just want to let everybody know that we're talking about sustaining our communities. You know, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has put forth the economic blueprint. We're going to Detroit for Savior's Day, and we're talking about urban gardening. We're talking about sustainability. We're talking about growing our own food, processing our own food, and having our own communities. And we want to ask some more questions of you, Brother Malik, about the significance of agriculture and food to sustain communities. But before we come to that question, we do have some callers already queued up, and we want to welcome to Elevated Places our first caller, Khalifa. Welcome to Elevated Places.
Thank you, Brother Terrence, Sister Dr. Ava, and to Dr. Ridgely. All praise to Allah. It's so beautiful to be able to hear this program, and it's so important for us to keep striving for this full program. You know, I was at a meeting the other night with some of the farmers here locally in Kansas City. And I shared with them the 1 minute and 38-some second YouTube video of Dr. King, MLK, deep speech, and they were just floored when they heard that. So let us keep on striving. And also, we have to remember that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us that we know what your mind suggests to you. In other words, we know what the enemy is planning, and they have no surprises for us. So we're going to be victorious, and we just keep on going, because what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan getting that farmland, when you get that farmland and push and promote that, what it does, it instantly, automatically destroys genocide. It automatically makes our young people and our young farmers we're trying together to become conquerors. I'm going to share this with you, and I'm going to get off the line. I was looking and researching the word for farmer in our mother tongue, and the word is for farmer in our mother tongue is falas. We hear that word falas 5 times a day in the Adhan, in the call to prayer. How you like falas? How you like falas? Falas means the tiller, the farmer, success, wealth, happiness. This is so important. The man, the male farmer, is Falahun. The female, Salahim. And the, both of them together, Salahi. So this is so, so important. God reminds us five times a day, get that land informed. Everybody listening, put in your nickel a day for the economic blueprint. Let's go to the land, because that's where it's all is, in that food, and you destroy genocide right on the spot. Thank you so much. As-salamu alaykum.
Thank you. Brother Malik, I want to ask a question. He just brought up something that was so profound, the point of success. You know, how, you know, we can already know the obvious that food sustains life. But I know with D-Town, y'all go a little bit deeper in the spiritual context of land and urban gardening. But how important is the work that you all are doing, how important is it to sustainabilities of communities and making
it vital.
Successful?
It's vital. As it has been said earlier in this show, agriculture is the foundation of civilization. And if you look at the great civilizations of the world, it's only when they had robust agricultural systems that they were able to really begin to explore philosophy and science and things like that. You can't really begin to explore the nature of the universe if you're hungry. And so agriculture is the foundation and the basis of civilization. So it's critical. But there's so many lessons that we learn when we interact with the earth. You know, the first thing, the European concept of science, you know, they tell us that there's living and non-living things. And so in the European worldview, the earth is just a rock, right? It's just a rock
right.
that has no life. But we know
right.
from our own cultural perspective that the earth itself is alive, right? The earth
right.
has energy too. And so by us interacting with the earth, we become more whole. We're part of nature. We're not separate from nature. That's the European construct, where they have this idea that human beings are separate from nature and we're here to dominate the earth. Our survival, our real sustainability depends upon us integrating ourselves with the matrix of life and understanding that we are part of life and we share this planet with the other plants and the animals, and that to be whole, that we have to interact with these energies that exist within nature. So it's critical that we get involved in farming and gardening, because it helps with our healing as well. You know, black people have a lot of healing that we have to go through, because we have this internalized trauma as a result of enslavement and all the oppression that we've endured since the time that we've been in the Western Hemisphere. So, but the other lesson that we learn is, with there's many lessons that we learn, but when we see a relationship, we see a process. When you plant a seed and you cultivate the earth and you water it and the sun interacts with it, you see that things happen in a process. Things don't happen instantly, right? So it teaches us respect for time. It teaches us respect for labor, that although, you know, farming, as a friend of mine said, is 90% God and 10% what we do, because the reality is that things are going to grow if we did nothing, right? But, you know, we're able to refine the process by the labor that we put into it. And so it teaches us about work, because many of us have lost our work ethic, you know, and although we talk about farming, many people have a romantic notion about farming, but I can tell you, and I'm sure Dr. Ridgely will testify, farming is hard work. Farming is hard work, right? It's not about talk, and it's not about philosophy. It's some serious work. And so working on a farm reinstills within us this kind of work ethic that we need not only to grow food, but that we need generally to uplift our communities and to uplift our people. There's so many lessons. Go ahead, brother. I'm sorry.
And before, Dr. Ridge, I want you to weigh in on the work part of it, because you said they ran us away from the farm. But I just wanted to say, Brother Malik, I think you are an avatar. I think that's what you are. And I'm thinking about the movie Avatar, and one of the things that we know, they took a lot of African culture, I mean, from the Yoruba, and just the whole concept of the tree that was in the movie, and he said there's this energy, and the white people said there's this energy, or something, or the white lady, the scientist said there's some energy that everybody's connected to. And they even said in that movie that the people and the animals and the creatures of that planet were connected to this energy. It's like antennas that went across the planet. And just like the people that have come over to all of, like the Caucasian have gone across the world, whenever they come in contact with that energy, they just destroyed it when they didn't understand they couldn't tap into it. So when they couldn't tap into it, like the indigenous people of the land, they just wiped it out and set up whatever institution they had for themselves. But Doc, can you make a comment about the work before we go to our next caller?
Well, you know, life is work. And we like to say that we are going to become gods and goddesses. And the sun does not ask for anything. It gives. It works all the time. What if man is, in fact, the vicegerent of God on the earth, and he expects us to transform the earth and the universe into a garden? Well, if we don't do the work, then nothing happens. And the enemy, our enemy, has, in fact, taken from us the desire to work. Therefore, he knows he has defeated God. The God in us is dead because we don't want to work. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has showed us through his example, and he's told us. He said the most powerful thing or the most happiest thing is to have an idea and then work and bring it into fruition, to make it manifest, and then to be appreciated for it. So this is where it's missing in our lives. We're missing purpose. And we try to get something for nothing and don't realize trying to get something for nothing is exactly death. And so we have to get back into the habit of working, and that's what farmers do. We work all the time, and we enjoy it because that's life. We'd rather be alive and working than dead and looking.
But, you know, working on a farm would save a whole lot of money for people who are spending money going to gyms and all that. You know, people go to gyms because the work that they do in their daily life is not really, you know, stimulating their muscles and keeping them stretched in their bones and what have you. And so the real work that happens on a farm, you know, really it has tremendous health benefits also. In addition to the food being grown, the work and being outside and being exposed to the sun and the fresh air has tremendous healing implications for people.
That's
all
correct,
right. Yeah, and we're going to go to a caller, but I do want, Brother Malik, I want you to come back. If you can pencil or jot that note down when you're saying the health benefits of farming and work and just getting the vitamin D from the sun. And trust me, I know about the workout plan. Dr. Ridgely loved to put me in the watermelon patch or delivering to my mom. And, yeah, lifting watermelons will get your weight lift on. But we have Brother Salam. We got Brother Salam that's on the Elevated Places. Welcome to Elevated Places, Dr. Salam.
Well, assalamu alaikum, family.
Well, Lake Salam.
Hello, sir.
I don't have to ask everybody how are you doing because you're on fire. Yes, sir. Dear brother, it's good to have you on. If I could just veer to the right just a little bit, and talk about something that's been on my heart that deals with where we are. As the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is talking about this wheel, we don't hear the reverb coming back to us because people, some of them, are shocked. But it's being talked about, and it's one of the most profound subjects, and it's kind of got the government in awe right now. But if I could just read five verses of Ezekiel, because that's who the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is actually making manifest today. Just let me read this, and I think I'll be on point with where we are. The sixth verse of Ezekiel, and he's got his commissions and instructions, is our beloved brother. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has his commission and instructions. And it says, "And thou son of man, be not afraid of them, neither be afraid of their words, their briars, and thorns be with thee, and thou dost dwell among scorpions. Be not afraid of their words, nor be dismayed at their looks, though they are a rebellious house. And thou shalt speak my words unto them, whether they hear or whether they forbear, for they are most rebellious. But thou, son of man, hear what I say unto thee. Be not thou rebellious like the rebellious house. Open thy mouth and eat that I give thee, And when I looked, behold, a hand was sent unto me, and lo, a roll of a book was therein. And he spread it before me, and it was written within and without, and there was written therein lamentations and mourning and woe. The reason I recited that is because if we look at the wheel, in the very last thing that the minister said, it is exactly these words. And what I'm saying to Muslims and what I'm saying mostly to Christians, we're looking at a black man whom we never thought would lead us to the resurrection and beyond. We were looking for a Caucasian with long flowing blonde hair that never existed in the first place. Who can come and get a people other than one of their own? We have followed an unlike person all of our lives. So this man is walking not only with the Quran in his hand, but on the other hand, he's walking with the Bible and the orders from Master Farab Muhammad by way of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So he's eating the truth, and he's digesting it, and he's feeding it to Satan, and Satan is fading. And those are my words for today. And I'll take some more notes and keep listening.
Praise be to Allah. I would just say to that, as we have a long list of callers, and I want to try to get to some more callers, I will echo what Brother Salam say, and I just will say this. I only want to even expound on the words of Minister Farrakhan, but I would say continue to listen to the time and what must be done every Saturday, 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern at NOI.org or NOI.org/the time. And we do know that we have to do something for ourselves, and the minister is teaching, and we need to start listening. And not only is he teaching on the wheel, but he, as we know, last year was the year of the farm, and that's what we need to be doing. So we need to do some work and get some farmland. But we want to welcome to Elevated Place. Go ahead, Brother Doc.
I just want to say one thing. Mr. Farrakhan has said over the next 2 weeks, he's going to deal with the beneficial parts of
sure.
the wheel,
right.
the New Jerusalem, on the next 2 weeks in terms of the technology that is there for us to bring down to the earth to transform the planet. So he talked about the destructive powers before. Now he's going to get into the reconstructive or the rebuilding or the refurbishing of the earth power that's on that wheel. So this is a great day coming up.
That's right. That's right.
And Brother Terrence and Sister Ava, and I want to say to everyone, I'm in and out because I'm driving. I'm listening at all times, but I have to mute so we don't disturb the program as I move about, because I'm still a wife and mother and all those things, so things
right.
come up. But listening to this powerful, powerful discussion, to that point, really, both the last several points, but, you know, as to the mothership, and, of course, dovetailing on Dr. Ridgely, it is a human-made planet, and it does scientists there grow their food there, so they don't partake of what is being manufactured here, most of which we're getting now contains death. But to the point that you all were discussing earlier about the healing aspects of the process and the act of gardening, because we are the Asiatic people. We're the Asiatic black man. We are the people of the earth, and we require contact with the planet constantly in order to sustain life. And I just wanted to share from the research department of Elevated Places, headed by Brother Bobby Muhammad, they lifted a quote from Brother Ron Finley, who's also known as the Gorilla Gardener out in South Central L.A.
Right.
And it fits right into the point that you all are raising about gardening, the empowerment. And quotes from him, growing your own food is like printing your own money. He said, gardening is the most therapeutic and defiant act you can do, especially in the inner city, plus you get strawberries. And lastly, he said, you ain't gangsta unless you have a garden. Gardening is gangsta because you are empowering yourself. The weapon I have chosen is not a gun. It is a shovel. So let me ease back and turn it back over to you all. But I just wanted to throw that into this beautiful discussion.
Yes.
And it is a wonderful discussion. Y'all are sparking me, but I'm going to try to hold it and let us get to these callers, because one of the things, the man that she just raised, I remember seeing a picture where in somebody's yard, just right on the curb, where there was a piece where you had some land, just start growing you some food, just getting in the process of doing that. But we have a sister calling from an area code 210. Sister calling from an area code 210. Welcome to Elevated Places.
Thank you, and assalamu alaikum, family.
Wa alaikum salam.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Malik. First, I have a comment.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I read a statistic once that 50% of Detroit was affected by food deserts. But at the end of the article, it said that only the people affected would be the one to have the solution. And it certainly sounds like you have the solution. I'd like to give you a high five through the telephone.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, sister.
My question is, how did you obtain organic seeds?
Mm-hmm.
And if
we... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And if I cannot get organic seeds, what is the next best type of seed?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's several seed companies that sell organic seeds, and so we seek them out, and we have been buying our seeds from those organic seed companies. I'll just name a couple of them that we buy from. One is called... I'm sorry. I'll think of the names in just a minute if you give me this. Johnny's Selected Seeds is one of them. They're based in Maine. They sell organic and non-organic seeds, so you have to specify as you look through their catalog which seeds you want. Sometimes they'll sell organic and non-organic of the same variety of vegetable. So we buy many of our seeds from them. And then there's other organic seed companies throughout the United States that are trying to maintain some integrity. But the other thing we started doing is seed saving. So once we know seeds are organic and we plant them and we harvest, then the next season we can use those same seeds in order to continue that stock. And what we found is that as you take the same stock and you grow it in the same environment, the same climate year after year, it adapts better to that particular environment. And so we're doing that as well. We would really encourage people to do seed saving, because one of the most devilish, dastardly things that has ever been done on the earth is this effort by Monsanto to control seeds. And so we know, you know, in addition to the genetically modified seeds, they've created these terminator seeds that can't reproduce in the next year. And so they're absolutely trying to control life. You know, the last poet said many years ago, the white man's got a God complex. And so, you know, we see this manifesting as we see them trying to actually control the seeds that human beings need to plant in order to grow food. So we have to push back against that. One of the ways that we do that is by saving our own seeds and making sure that we're preserving these organic strains. And I would highly recommend that we only deal with organic seeds whenever possible. And if not, at least to make sure the seeds are not genetically modified.
Okay, thank you so much. May I please ask Brother Dr. Richley a question?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Brother Dr. Richley,
yes.
Is there anything? I would like to take my two granddaughters, or at least my one older granddaughter, and I would like to come there to the farm to work a little bit, just to give her that experience, give me that experience. My father was a farmer, and then, of course, then he lived his life. He went into the military and so forth, and then he just had a wonderful garden after he got out, and so now he doesn't maintain that garden. But I would love to come to work on your farm. Is there a way to do that? Do you have any programs like that, or, you know?
Yes, we do.
Like that?
If you would, you would email me.
Yes.
Dr. Ridge, D-R-R-I-D-G-E, at NOIMOA.com. It's Dr. Ridge at NOIMOA.com, and we can communicate.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much, Brother Malik.
Thank you, sister.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalam. And I want to comment on what Brother Malik said about how the seeds, once you save the seeds, how they begin to acclimate to the environment. You know, that's so beautiful in terms of how that the universe is made and the earth is made, that the seeds are so intelligent that once they see that this will be their permanent environment, then they will structure themselves to fit in and to better produce for us. So, you know, that's a beautiful thing that I just learned from the brother just now, how important it is to allow the plant itself to adapt itself so it can better serve us.
And thank you, brother. I'm learning from you as I hear you articulate that also.
That's why we're on Elevated Places. So we're going to go to the next caller. Sister Eula, welcome to Elevated Places.
Thank you. Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
I heard Sister Ava, you speak a few weeks ago about counterintelligence, and I just wanted to say that was an excellent lecture, and it really shows how difficult it has been for us to pull our resources together, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, and our energy and our brain power. You're welcome. The gist of what I wanted to say was that I heard someone on the radio state how years ago we as mothers and wives were cooks, and our husbands didn't have these ills where they were running to doctors. We would take Epsom salt to thin our blood to prevent heart attacks, strokes, and other blood clots and aneurysms. We were naturopathics and didn't know it. And I basically, this is my lifestyle. I live a very naturopathic life. I use nothing but natural cures, and exercise, and diet. And I'm encouraging all of the brothers and sisters to get back to nature. If they can't get out and work in the yard right now, it's wintertime for us, they can still exercise and eat properly. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam. And Brother Malik, that goes right
yes,
back
sir.
Into the point I said, put a pin on it about the health benefits,
yes.
as she was saying. And I just do remember growing up in the country and going able to pick the apples off of my own tree or go to my neighbor's garden and get the corn and everything that we was eating right out of our back, literally right out of our backyards. But can you talk and expound on what the sister was just talking about?
Well, again, you know, there's multiple benefits. There's the benefit of connecting with the life-giving energy of the earth itself. There's the benefit of being in fresh air. There's the benefit of being exposed to the sun. There's the benefit of being more aware of the seasons. You know, in farming, you automatically become aware of things like shadows and the angle of the sun and how long the sun is out each day and the rain patterns. It attunes you more to nature. We spend way too much of our time now inside buildings and on concrete and in concrete and inside bricks, and so we're not able to really connect fully with the nature of the universe that we're part of. And so farming and gardening helps restore that connection. It helps us to be more whole while at the same time we're growing food that can sustain our physical lives.
And I just wanted to add to that, there's been a paradigm shift over the last 50 years, whereas the goal now is to do nothing as much as possible and to have no contact with anything as much as possible. They have scientifically got us to move towards a graveyard existence. And so now we have to scientifically break ourselves from that. And one thing I want to ask the brother is, how successful have you been to get people to go back into the kitchen and to start cooking from scratch?
Well, it's a difficult process. I don't want to, you know, make this sound like it's easy, because none of this is easy. You know, our people are severely damaged, and so we have a lot of work to do. But you know, we're seeing slow progress. You know, part of the difficulty, of course, as Sister Ava said earlier in the show, is that we have people in the workforce. You know, there used to be a time when perhaps the father would go out and work and the mother could really tend to the home. And now with the way the economy is, you know, we have everybody having to go out into the workforce to do something to try to generate some money. And so people are always looking for ways to make the rest of the time after they've given the best time to the white man in this system, then they try to find out in the remaining time how do they make it more convenient for themselves. And so part of what we have to do is try to get people to break out of this convenience mindset and to really focus on what is best for ourselves and our people, not just what is the most convenient, because oftentimes those things which are the most convenient are the things that have the most detrimental effect on us. So it's a real struggle trying to get people to break out of that, and even people who understand the value of cooking fresh whole foods sometimes are challenged with just structuring their day in such a way that they have the time to prepare those foods, because, you know, cooking whole fresh foods takes time. You know, it's not the same as just opening up a can or a package and throwing it into a pot. You know, you have to take things and wash them and cut them and prepare them. And then, you know, but also, you know, as someone was saying, I think Dr. Abel Muhammad was saying at the beginning of the show, you know, her mother would prepare meals. And so part of what happens is love that's transmitted into the food also when you go through this preparation process. And so, you know, we want to make sure that occurs also. So we see some small movement in that area. But, you know, what we found is that so much of our food culture has been lost as a result of this fast food culture that we've adopted. And so many of us no longer even know how to prepare a squash or an eggplant. You know, I've given fresh vegetables to people, and they say, well, what do I do with this? What do I do with the beet? I don't know what to do with this. And so
that's right.
Part of what we do, we have a youth program called the Food Warriors, and part of what we do in the Food Warriors is teach young people and their parents how to prepare some of these foods that our grandparents or our parents perhaps knew how to prepare, but the current generation has really lost that knowledge. You know, there's been a break in the transmission of intergenerational knowledge because of this culture of convenience that has arisen in America in the post-World War II era.
That's good
beautiful,
information.
Yes. Oh, my God, what a beautiful teaching. The mindset and, you know, the neurotransmitters of the brain, once they go back and forth a few times on a certain wavelength, it is so difficult to break that. And now we are, as you all are saying, Brother Malik, Brother Dr. Ridgely, Brother Chance, this is generational now. This is no easy task to break that hold. And it definitely is going to require the visual reality of a model community that is actually engaging in what we are talking about. And that community will begin to produce people who think, act, look, and behave differently. And that unlike people will attract our people back to who they are. See, we don't even have a model now of what we once were and what we can be. And as a result of that, you know, people will not change unless they are dissatisfied with what they are.
That's right.
And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that. He taught us that the force that brings about change is dissatisfaction. And if people are satisfied, you know, just like black women have been led through a design, and there have been spokespeople for this wicked scheme to teach us that obesity is okay. Not only is it okay, it's desirable, it's healthy, it's beautiful. We've been taught that to be a woman who refuses to cook for her family, that's okay. So that's what we're fighting against.
Well, you know, we are fighting against a war because, you know, if, in fact, the best way to eliminate people is through food, then they have gotten us in a position where they can eliminate people. And we know and we can see how many, a lot of people are dropping dead every day, early age, middle age, old age. But, you know, we used to work all day in the sun in the plantations, but now we're dropping dead from just sitting down. So if they're killing us, we're at war, and when we decide that we want to fight back, that's when we will start fighting back. But right now we're complacent, thinking that everybody loves us and everything's okie-dokie, but we are at war.
Praise be to Allah. Whew, y'all are dropping some heat, and we have another comment by Brother Ron. Welcome to Elevated Places.
Thank you, brother. Okay, you get your non-GMO seeds, organic seeds. You make sure your ground is fertile and organic. But what about the water source? Because the water is full of fluoride, hydrofluorosilicic acid, all of the pharmaceutical drugs that people take, and so that's going right into the plants. So I was wondering, you know, has any thought been given to? I know I've been thinking about what to do to filter, purify the water source.
Well, first of all, you're absolutely correct, Brother Ron, and I'll just say that that's something that we haven't addressed yet. And the other part of that reality, just to extend your argument a little bit more, is that we live in a toxic environment. I mean, so not only are there toxins in the water, but there's toxins in the atmosphere also that fall down on plants. And so, so you know, we're taking this thing incrementally. And eventually we need to address that question of how do we purify enough water, because it's not the same thing as purifying water in your house to have a couple of gallons to drink. You know, when you're talking about using, you know, hundreds of thousands of gallons in farming, you know, so we have to figure that out and develop that technology. But it's part of a larger problem, which is that the environment generally is toxic because we live in a society that is ruled by people who have no respect for nature and whose only motive is profit.
And one thing
I'd like to add,
before Doc go in, I just wanted to jump in two things that just on an average thinker mind, is two things that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave us. One is how to eat to live, because he knew about what will be going on in this day and time, and he knew how much toxins we would have. So to eat one meal a day and to fast at least three times a month will help alleviate some of the toxins that he knew would be in the water, in the food, in the air. So when we take on more of this poison food, then we take on more toxins. But the last point I would say is the solution that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is bringing to us again of the economic blueprint. Separation is the best and only solution. So we're actually trying to live righteous in an unrighteous environment and world, and we will always be under that poison. So until we get our own land and make sure that that land is fertile land and clean land, then we will continue to have this kind of condition.
Let me suggest, Brother Terrence.
Can we add? I'm sorry. Go ahead,
Brother Terrence.
Let
me just suggest that this is also a global problem, because we're seeing now, as a result of the nuclear reactor disaster that occurred in Japan a few years ago, we're seeing a tremendous impact along the west coast of the United States on marine life. And so, while we might have our own land, we live in a world where we still have to reform the world so that, you know, crazy people are not running it who are doing crazy things, you know, because the atmosphere knows no national boundaries. There's no, you know, there's no borders where the wind stops. And so if we still got insane people, you know, running the world doing insane things that diminish the quality of life, then we're still impacted by that.
That's right.
I want to ask, too. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Sister Ava.
Oh, yeah.
Did we talk about I'm in and out, but the fluoride and the chlorine in the water, you know that Dr. Scott Whitaker, who wrote the book Medicine, M-E-D-I-S-I-N, A Naturopath Out of California, that one thing he recommends to help reduce that, because as is being said, there is no 100% elimination of it, because fluoride is in 90% of the tap water, and chlorine is in 100% of it. But distilled water with a little bit of baking soda, real baking soda, helps give us the alkaline balance that we need and helps that. So to the extent possible, we should drink distilled water. Be careful to, you know, look into who the manufacturers are, even of the distilled water. Going back to the issue of home and family, another way in which, you know, the woman is a scientist is in knowing how to shop for her family. That's been
she still there?
She may have dropped off on mute.
Okay, how much does it cost? And so we don't want to pay another 20 cents or another 30 cents to get a better product. And whether it's water or bathroom tissue, these things that we engage in every day, we may not be able to buy a $1 million home yet, but on a day-to-day basis, there are many things we can do to make the quality of life better, and we have to start paying more attention to what we are doing. And part of that empowerment is doing the best you can do, and not putting the needs of the family last, but put the needs of the family first. And always ask when we're bringing something into our home, is this going to facilitate life or is this going to militate against life?
Okay, two things I want to add. Number one, we have to be careful against spiritual and mental pollution. What I mean by that is that one game the enemy plays is that he wants you to think that it's so bad, no matter which way you go, that you might as well not do anything. So if you have the if you have the mindset, well, if I can't do it perfectly right, if I can't get a perfect water, if I can't get perfect seed, if I can't get perfect ground, then I'm not going to do anything, and I'm not going to support the economic blueprint because it's not worth it, because we're so overwhelmed. We've got to be careful about this psychological pollution that they're playing with us. And number two, the plant is a tremendous cleansing device itself. If it grows and produces a crop, it's detoxified itself to the point that it can grow and produce a crop, and I guarantee you that that's better than you eating nothing and better than eating processed. The majority of our poisons are not coming from the plant. It's coming from what they do with the product after it is grown. I will say that again. The toxins that we are eating is not from the plant, but look at what on the box, on a bag, or on a jar, on the back, and you will see how the people are being poisoned. It is not the plant that is poisoning the people. The plant is cleaning up the earth. It is what they do after it. That's why we must stop eating anything in a bag, in a can, in a box that the white man has touched through his processing. That's why we have to do our own value added to our own crops. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm not sure if we, well, I think we did. Our next caller, Brother Albert. Welcome to Elevated Places.
Assalamualaikum, family.
Assalamualaikum.
I have a general question. First, I'd like to just give each one of y'all salutations, Sister Ava, Dr. Ridgely, Brother Terrence, and Brother Malik. This is in regard to Savior's Day.
Assalamualaikum, sir.
This is in regard to Savior's Day. I guess the symposium of some sort will be set up for us to get further into the agricultural aspect of this land. And then second, my question is there any way that we can possibly set up an interstate commerce of products to help facilitate some type of income to generate the best of what we could in terms of the products that we may produce off of our own farmland, and how will we get other community conscious churches, community involved in this process, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, you know,
I would just say
this
as to Savior's Day,
yep.
We will focus heavily on agriculture, heavily. And then I'll turn it back over to Dr. Ridgely and Brother Terrence and Brother Malik to talk more about interstate commerce. But yes, sir, go ahead.
With that statement, I assume that I would have a workshop at Savior's Day.
I'm sorry.
I'm just kidding. Just kidding. I did apply for the agriculture workshop, so hopefully we will have one for the Ministry of Agriculture.
Well, I told you that we would.
Okay, I just wanted to just get it.
Just wanted to say it in front of everybody.
Okay.
I'm going back on mute. Okay.
Okay. On the other issue, yes, brother. This is one of the things that we're doing in the Ministry of Agriculture is developing that transportation system. We call it Meet Me Halfway. It is a program by which the farmers are going to do value added and then collect and then distribute, and the people in the city is going to receive. And we're doing it on a small level, the Ministry of Agriculture now, and we want to expand upon that. So hopefully you will come to Savior's Day and we can talk more about that. Also, we have a broadcast every Saturday night. The Ministry of Agriculture has a broadcast on Blog Talk Radio /NYMOA.com right after the time of what must be done. And in that, we talk about just what you are talking about doing, brother. We're working on it. Please join us and help us do it.
Praise be to Allah. Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. All right. We're quickly winding down. But Brother Lewis, welcome to Elevated Places.
Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam, Brother Lewis.
How y'all doing? Really, really enjoying the show. Held on for a while, and I'll try to be very, very brief. I wanted to give a shout-out because Sister Ava said something last week, and it was so profound. She said that we need to stop paraphrasing, beating around the bush, and be more blunt with what we have to say and what we want and desire. This week, the Associated Press put an article in the newspaper, and it says, what academic calls for boycott to tell Israel? And what they're doing really is responding to the research team, where different academic groups are calling for boycott because of the lies that have been told by Israel. And Richard Cohen is the author of the article, and he all but said, well, he called the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's name out in the article, saying that, you know, these people were following him. But the question that I wanted to ask is, in Detroit, in 1968, in March, the Republic of New Africa met there, and many black nationalists were starting to meet with Dr. King after his meeting with the Honorable Minister, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and it seemed as though Dr. King was moving toward land and independence more than this so-called civil rights stuff. And I wanted to see, is the Republic of New Africa, or are there any groups like that around in Detroit now? And last, but just a quick insert, the video that Dr. Ridgely sent out and that Brother Terrence sent out, since the research team and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan have been lifting up Dr. Martin Luther King, I've been listening to like 30-minute speeches of Dr. King that I've never heard before, and every one of them are about land, freedom, and independence. And so I thank y'all, and I'll just listen. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam. Thank you, brother. The Republic of New Africa does still exist. It doesn't have a strong presence in Detroit, but it has a few kind of what we might call offshoots. One is called the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, which has a branch in Detroit. And then also our brother Chokwe Lumumba, who at one time was the vice president of the provisional government of the Republic of New Africa, is now the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi. And so one of the things that Brother Chokwe is looking at is how he can stimulate agriculture both in the city of Jackson, in the rural areas surrounding Jackson, as part of his plan to create greater self-sufficiency. So those ideas still has some resonance both in the city of Detroit and with black people throughout this country.
And I will be going to Jackson on the 25th of January to meet with the mayor and to discuss these issues with the black farmers in Mississippi. I'll be going in on January 25th.
Excellent. Please give Brother Shoka my greetings.
Yes, sir. I will.
All right. Well, we have had a powerful show, very powerful show, and we're going to try to get this last call in. You about have 30 seconds to throw in a comment or a quick question. Welcome to Elevated Places, Sister Barbara. You're on Elevated Places. If you can make this quick, want to close on out.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum. The brother Malik, are you the one of the Onyx, the creator got a master plan?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
What, are you a musician, wrote the song?
Yes, ma'am. I'm a musician.
Yes, I used to come hear you all the time when I lived in Detroit. But what I was
Did you mention Onyx? Yes, I used to play guitar with Onyx. Yes, ma'am.
Uh-huh. What I wanted to say, in the Journal of Environment and Public Health, it has been proven that walking on the earth has health benefits that also improve your health. Because the earth, we are electrical beings, and the earth, and we give out a positive charge, and the earth is an electrical conductor, and it gives out a negative charge. And it has been proven that the body system has benefits from what, your barefoot touching the earth. And that is something we used to know, and we lost that information. And it helps in healing, and it helps you to sleep, and it allows your body to rejuvenate itself. Also, I wanted to say very quickly is that physics have proven that praying over your water improves the quality of that water. And that is the original reason why we prayed over water, is to pray that whatever harmful materials was in that water would not impact us negatively. So I would suggest that if you're going to, when you do as my father used to do at our garden in Detroit, when he was watering his plants, he would always pray. And so pray over the water, and it will improve it, because science has proven scientifically that positive applications of comments toward water improve the quality of water.
Thank you, Sister, for sharing that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sister Brother. And Brother Malik, we want to thank you. And, of course, Dr. Ridgen, I want to bring back Sister Ava to go ahead. And if we have any more last comments, to go ahead and close us out. Are you still there or able to talk, Dr. Ava?
Yes, sir. I just turned into a parking garage, and I pray I don't drop. But, too, Brother Malik, you are just brilliant. And more than that, you're strong and dedicated and exactly who and what we need. And then to find out you're a musician as well, not surprising, because the harmony that you have with nature is phenomenal. And I know that I, as well as our listeners, have been so inspired as well as informed. And I really look forward to having you on the panel when we broadcast live from Savior's Day on Elevated Places on Thursday, February the 20th at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. And it's just a pleasure to meet you via telephone, and look forward to meeting you. And to everyone else, I want to say to the Elevated Places team, Dr. Ridgely, Brother Terrence, Brother Bobby, Sister LaDonna, Sister Rona, Brother Ashad, Brother Timothy, all who, as this program expands and grows and people just come and offer their gifts, their skills, their talent to make this forum a reality, because we need to come together to create and then implement an exit strategy. We're in the reality of the exodus that was prophesied in the book of Genesis. We actually live in that moment. So I just want to remind everyone the time and what must be done. Saturday, 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern. Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to and participating in Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Mahan. Be sure to join us right here every Thursday at blogtalkradio.com/Elevated Places. If you have enjoyed our show today, please bookmark Elevated Places as one of your favorites. And remember, we are all preparing for a brand new world.